Hello and welcome to Book Squad Goals. We are going to start the episode with a dramatic reading. Take it away, Mary.
Wait, is it dramatic?
Oh, it's just sweet. It's a sweet poem.
Okay, that's fine.
This is a poem by Tide called A Love Poem. When we started dating, I told my wife, cats cannot feel love, that, and I quote, any emotion you see in the eyes is simply a reflection of your own peering back at you. Now I find myself tucked over a food bowl, spooning moist pats of salmon onto my fingers and presenting it to our cat as if he were a god and I a humble supplicant with the merest offering. I don't know if he loves me, though I think he might, but I know I love him, and as I am so often wrong about things, my wife likes to mention this to me. Did you ever think you would love two cats? She asks, and I answer, of course, no. What else could I say? I am trying to fall in love with the world. I am trying my best. I am tired all the time, but when a cat crawls onto my stomach or across my lap, I feel loved. Of course I do. To feel otherwise would be preposterous. I feel my cat's sandpaper tongue, and it feels like a benison, matins and vesper in one, and I, like the holiest child of some not entirely holy deity. I am praying he may be eternal. I am sending him all my love and receiving something like love in return, a warmth and a breadth more real than most people have shown. He will recover, I'm sure, and we will have many years of this to go. I will continue in awe of him, in love with a being whose own capacities are simply unknowable, a bottomless pond, the heights of the sky, the sea.
Aww.
Very appropriate that we talk about the unknowable sea. Also, I hate to be this person. That was a very sweet poem. I did cry reading it again this morning. That cat did die.
I almost cried just now hearing that you read cat, about it, because yeah. I know it's about Edward.
Sweet Edward. No longer with us, but well, loved.
He is so loved, and we dedicate this very special Halloween episode to him.
As an episode orange
which
cat.
Otherwise has nothing to do with Halloween.
Ghost of Edward.
It does come out on Halloween.
Visiting.
Edward's ghost is with us. Yeah. Is Edward in the room?
We always say that seance. Because pizza rolls so bad, we're like, Ghost of Edward's telling him to be bad.
I think the ghost of Nuggie is talking to Shim sometimes.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think Ghost of Nuggie.
I've never
talks
had
to
a cat
Shin.
Before Penelope, so she has no excuse.
I think Ghost of P might talk to C sometimes.
No, I think Ghost of P talks to Moo.
To Moo?
Yeah.
Aww.
Lots of ghosts.
Well, on this episode,
anyway.
We are talking about.
Speaking of
Our Wives Under the Sea. Speaking of nothing about that, we're talking about Our Wives Under the Sea by Julia Armfield. Just a note, Susan is still not here. Yeah. We miss her. We send our love to her and her child, who is hopefully dressed like a pumpkin.
I hope right Amira is dressed like this. A pumpkin every single day from now to Halloween.
Me too.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. So for today's question, I wanted to ask, what is your favorite story about the sea?
I feel like Emily should go first because she had a very strong answer.
Well, yeah. And I guess, like, you know, I was just in Hawaii, so I was thinking about this movie a lot because we went to this, like, Polynesian Culture Center, which was it was like for real like Disneyland, but just okay, this is what it was like. And I am gonna get to my answer. It's coming. This is what it was like. I feel like I gotta talk on this episode about how I was just in Hawaii at least five times.
Yes.
It's like required.
Mm-hmm.
So this place was like, and if you've been there, you know, it's on Oahu. It's like a cross between Disneyland and a Renaissance festival, but all Polynesian stuff.
I'm listening.
So there are like different areas of the place that are like different parts of You know, so there's like a New Zealand area, there's a Hawaii area, et cetera, et cetera. Except, I'm sorry, they don't call it New Zealand. I don't remember what they call it. I didn't learn very well. But anyway, there is, and like there
you were too distracted by the rides.
Yeah. I went on a boat ride, you know. There are shows that you can go to throughout the lands. And in one of the little huts, you go in and they're like showing you all the things you can make with, guess what? This is the interactive
shells,
part.
Palm fronds.
No, coconuts. Think about Moana. Yeah, coconuts. So the whole time in my head, I was just thinking, consider the coconuts, the trunks and leaves. The island gives us what we need.
What we need. Anyway.
So that means Emily's pick is Moana.
Yes, it is. Moana is my favorite Disney movie, and it's, the ocean is an actual character in the film, so.
It calls it's, me.
It's very ocean
Don't sue us, Disney.
Centered. Yeah. Yeah, we're throwing a lot we're throwing a lot of Disney songs in this one. So someone else pick the Little Mermaid. Let's just go all the way.
I thought about it. I really did.
Little Mermaid is a close second, I would say.
Earlier when I was thinking about it, Todd was like, I'm pretty sure the Little Mermaid's the only answer.
No, Moana is an answer, Todd. Remind him of
Moana. I had said I can't pick Moana because Emily is picking Moana.
Yeah, the Little Mermaid also
So
very
Little
good.
Mermaid is the only answer other than Moana. Is Todd
So if Todd answer? Were yes. here, that would be his answer.
I will say my answer is the lighthouse, and I will not be taking questions.
That's bold of you.
Wait, like the movie? With the David Eggers movie?
With Willem Dafoe?
Wait, you like that movie?
I have
questions.
I don't know if I liked it, but this says your favorite story about the sea. And I was really struggling. I also really like The Life Aquatic.
I just remember after seeing The Lighthouse turning to Ben and going, that was really arty.
Yeah, I think I was just kind of disappointed by The Lighthouse because I had really high expectations coming out of The Witch. Mm-hmm. And I felt like it was kind of an experience that felt like a short film that was extended into being a full feature length film.
Yeah, they were
which
like,
is
what
maybe
if we
appropriate
add more jizz
for
to this
episode.
It's very clear Amanda. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But Willem Dafoe yelling, like, hark, Triton!
It's a super fun performance. I mean, both of the performances are fun.
I think my real answer is I don't really like stories about the sea because it scares me.
Oh, yeah. It's so scary.
Much like space, it is scary.
I think the ocean is almost scarier than space because, like, it's so close to us.
Yeah, it's right there.
And it's coming for us.
Appropriately, my choice is Jaws, a horror movie, which is more a movie about a shark, I suppose, than about the sea itself.
He's
but there are
there.
Extended portions of the movie that take place on the sea in a boat. And it is also about, you know, the unknowableness of the deep.
No one picked the Kristen Stewart movie where she is in a submarine.
Meg.
Did anyone see that?
I did. I absolutely saw that. Are you kidding me? Okay.
I also said Muppet Treasure Island.
Oh my gosh, that's great.
That's a good one too.
But like, no, for real, this is relevant. Because like, as Mary said, like, I think the ocean is really fucking scary. So like, horror about ocean shit is like very much my wheelhouse, because like, if you want to scare me, I'm like, anything you tell me that happened in the ocean, I believe it, because we don't know.
Like, ghosts, not scary. Possession, not scary.
I think all that stuff's scary too.
Ocean
but
creatures?
I think that's
ocean scary. Creatures are real, and we don't know what's down there. It could be anything. Literally could be anything.
I find myself simultaneously, like, frightened yet like comforted by the ocean. I love the ocean. Mm-hmm. I think, I mean, I am from Florida, as I have to mention probably once per episode. I didn't actually grow up like by the, I mean, kind of, my grandparents lived on like near the beach. So I went to the beach a lot as a kid.
I feel like I spent, if you're in Florida, you're in proximity.
Yeah. And I was born in Miami. So I spent a lot of like my childhood on the beach. And like, I don't know, I love the beach. I love the ocean. I love going out and standing like waist deep in the ocean and staring out like, to the point where, like, you can't see anything around you except just, like, the ocean going out forever. Mm-hmm. And it's this, like, very meditative feeling of, like, I could be, horrifying. Like, anyone at any That's time horrifying. Ever and be looking at this same exact thing, you know?
Yeah.
Which is kind of a interesting, comforting feeling. And it's also, like, such a – it is such an incredibly powerful thing. And I think – like we say about space, like that's so far away and the ocean is so close, and it's like it is scary to be close to something that huge and powerful and unknowable, but it's also like kind of miraculous.
It's a, you know? It is constant.
Yeah.
I get that. It's not that's scary. It's like deep sea.
What's there? What's inside it? Yeah. I mean, it's definitely scary anyway. Like, I'm not saying it's not. It is. But I...
Well, when I was in Hawaii... More... No, I'm just
well.
I was basically living there.
Yeah. So during my time in right. Hawaii.
Yes.
Yeah.
So... I also want to note, just before I forget, that I am drinking a... like sparkling water that I got at a Japanese grocery store that is Sailor Moon themed.
Oh, whoa. I'm so jealous.
Look at it. It's so cute. And it's called Ocean Bomb.
I'll have to see.
Which I didn't even realize until like? I took it out. It's grapefruit flavor.
I'll have to see if I can find those flavor, somewhere. Because like, I guess I just didn't realize that Japanese grocery stores would have that. But like, of course they would, right?
Yeah. They have like all the fun, cute stuff. Yeah. I'm sure this is meant for children, but I don't care.
Whatever.
Whatever. So I have a Goodreads summary, that is grammatically incorrect.
So it's definitely from Goodreads, right?
Yeah. So this is a real, we're going back to basics with this one. Here it is. Miri thinks she has got her wife back, comma, when Leah finally returns after a deep sea mission that ended in catastrophe. What kind of sentence structure is that, I ask?
Bad. A bad one.
Anyway, it soon becomes clear, though, that Leah is not the same. Whatever happened in that vessel, whatever it was they were supposed to be studying before they were stranded on the ocean floor, Leah has brought part of it back with her onto dry land and into their home. Moving through something that only resembles normal life, Miri comes to realize that the life that they had before might be gone. Though Leah is still there, Miri can feel the woman she loves slipping from her grasp. Our Wives Under the Sea is the debut novel from Julia Armfield, the critically acclaimed author of Salt Slow. It's a story of falling in love, loss, grief, and what life there is in the deep, deep sea.
What is Salt Slow?
That...
short stories.
I believe that is a collection of short stories.
Okay, I'm like, I was just like, are we supposed to know what that is?
Yeah. Also, it is not capitalized, but it's purposefully not like that, I guess.
Reads, get which it is together. Annoying.
I know. Well, no, the book is, she, it's like,
Julia,
not
get it together.
Yeah, I know. Like, we're, it's not E.E. Cummings over here. Anyway, spoiler warning, we're going to spoil this book.
And maybe also a trigger warning for suicide?
I guess if we talk about, like, Jelka. I mean, I guess it's not, kind of.
It could come up.
It's not literal, but...
it's not literal,
content warning
but
for
it's
like,
not fun.
Yeah. For, I don't know, depression metaphors.
Yeah. Content warning for metaphors.
Oh, God.
This story is told from two perspectives and two different moments in time. So Miri is one character and Leah is the other. Miri's chapters take place in the present after Leah has returned. Leah is the one who went under the sea. Her chapters take place in the past, describing what exactly happened on her sunken vessel. And we eventually learn that she wrote these chapters before resurfacing. So,
oh, did we eventually how did the structure learn that? Work I thought for I us? Knew that in the beginning.
I don't think we knew that in the beginning.
Oh, I think I just kind of assumed that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, you could have been like, she's writing it as she's hiding in the bathroom for hours or whatever. Like,
I don't think she was writing anything in the bathroom. But, okay.
Well, there was no way of knowing.
It's definitely right. in the okay. past, saying. Though. Like,
yes.
We knew okay. it was yeah, in the past like, the whole time.
Right. Well, because she was describing the past. Like, right. She wasn't talking about any of her present.
We don't know where the point of narration was until later.
Right.
Okay.
Until they have an outsider's moment.
Right.
This whole thing because is a book Miri.
We love that. Miri's
spoiler
sections are in moment. Written in present tense, and yeah. Leah's are not.
Yeah.
So
it could have been after she got back.
Yeah. There's just, you didn't know.
Yeah.
And again, until we have the, here are these folded up letters that I have retrieved. Anyway, my question is, how did this structure work? Do we prefer one perspective over another? I already know
how
Mary's
Mary
answer
feels.
To this. So, Mary, go ahead.
Yeah, I feel like Mary has strong opinions.
Mary... Okay, so, like, when I first started
reading... Does Miri suck, or does Miri's sections suck?
Both.
Is the question.
Both.
Okay, I disagree, but I'll let you go first.
Okay.
Same.
Well, I wouldn't just say Miri sucks, point blank, no nuance. Like, there is more to that. But
yeah.
Her sections were very boring for the most part to me. Like, the beginning of the book, it feels like Miri is understandably hung up on, like, how Leah used to be and how she's not the same anymore since she came back. And she's trying to grapple with that. But it wasn't interesting to me because it was so internal, and it's a lot of Miri thinking of what seems to be like over romanticized memories of like remembering how Leah yeah. laughs or how she talked a lot or had funny little quirky questions she would ask. Eventually, Miri's sections got more interesting to me, but only because we were finding out more about what was happening to Leah through Miri's sections. But even then, I didn't, like,
yeah.
love Miri. I don't know. It was hard to get yanked back and forth because I was so interested in Leah's sections, and then I did not... Miri's sections felt like flexing an MFA. If that makes sense. Like, I'm going to do some pros, some real pros here.
I think we always have to remind listeners of this because it definitely informs Mary and my's opinion on a lot of stuff. Susan's too, probably.
Yeah.
We were all in grad program for English and were around yeah. a lot of pretentious writers. And so sometimes pretentious writing can be triggering.
It gets my hackles up.
Yeah. So I get
my
that.
Hackles were
I
up.
Get, I don't fully agree with you, but I yeah. get where you're coming from.
And I'm and
yeah,
I fully
I think...
admit I was like feeling very defensive from the jump and like maybe being a little ungenerous just because of the
Yeah. The I don't totally, I don't totally agree with you, but I also don't disagree with you. Like, I agree that Leah's sections are more successful than Miri's, and I also think that I think the main issue is that Miri's sections lack momentum of any yeah. kind because we're just kind of like only towards the end when it's like Leah's condition starts worsening in some way do we really get that kind of like forward motion in her story.
Well, it's like almost every time there starts to be momentum, she is like, let me take you back to this memory I had. And it very much like disrupts the flow of the story. So I think like momentum is the issue there. But I think like if you skip those sections as you're reading, there is momentum to the story from the beginning. And that's why I would like kind of disagree with Mary, because I do think from the beginning, there's interesting things happening in Mary's chapters. It's just that like right when you're getting really into the story, she's like, I remember this time. And I'm like, this has nothing to do with anything. And you cannot convince me otherwise.
And it's also just not that, like, I felt my real problem with this, and like, we can get more into this when we talk about their relationship, but I felt like so much of, like, I understand, like, and I've complained about the exact opposite in the past, where I feel like we don't get enough of what a couple's relationship was like before whatever event occurs or whatever. So then I'm like, I don't feel the sadness because I don't understand what was good, you know? But I feel like it was almost too much of that. And also it was kind of odd because it was like so specific yet like empty in a lot of ways. Like I felt like so many of the things she was saying about like Leah were these like really like things that you would notice about a partner that are really specific to that person, but without like the overall grounding of what that person actually is, like what your relationship is like. It's just all the details without any of the like, you know?
Yeah.
And that was really frustrating.
That's why I feel like that's why it bothered me so much, because like and I know I said this already, but like every single time it went there, I would like the whole time I was like, why am I getting this detail? Like there was nothing to connect it to a bigger picture of like what they're like. It was just, it felt very random.
Yes.
This is articulating how I felt a little bit better, because I do think this kind of like roller coaster of now we're getting somewhere, just kidding, we're back in something else that's unconnected, really threw me off and made me feel like Miri's sections were less interesting. It felt like there was a lot of description in Miri's section, but it wasn't really describing anything important.
And it just wasn't impacting me emotionally the way that it was trying to, I think.
Yeah.
Because it was missing something crucial, but I can't quite, like, define what that thing is.
Well, I mean, I'm just thinking, like, there's one part where, you know, Miri's thinking about how things used to be, and she's like, we went to a movie at midnight, and we ate popcorn, and I'm like, cool.
Yeah.
It felt like
all of those
repetition of like, I liked how things were before.
Right. Or like, this was how quirky my girlfriend was when we were together and we had this like very cute relationship. And then she was my wife and it continued to be cute. And
I wanted to hear like,
I don't know, like
a real bitch sometimes.
I mean, on that part, I was actually more interested in that kind of stuff because I can relate to being a bitch, like, and because, like, we kind of get the impression that, like, Miri is the more anxious one of the two and is kind of this, like, again, like, a very, like, internal person who struggles a lot with, I don't know, like, getting out of her head and stuff like that. And so it's, like, she is, like, she can be really, like, kind of mean, and she kind of talks about how, you know, like Leah was never as mean as she was, and like Leah was more willing to like see like the positive things in other people and less immediately like hateful in some ways. And I'm like, definitely, I feel that if I were to like compare this to my relationship, I am the Miri in the relationship. You know, I got that, but I felt like, again, it just felt disconnected, and I felt like those parts didn't, I don't know, the romance aspect didn't tie in well enough with, like, any of the conflict that we saw between them. And like the, I don't know, the most interesting parts of Miri's sections to me were like about her mom. Mm. And like that stuff was a little more affecting emotionally, I think. But yeah. I don't know.
I feel like this is just going into your next question a little bit, talking about
that's
the
fine.
Romance stuff. But as I was reading this, I was kind of like looking at what other people were saying about it. And I saw that this book is described as romantic a lot mm-hmm. by reviewers. And I found that interesting because like I didn't read it that way.
Yeah.
I don't like, yeah. I wouldn't say that this is like, yeah, there's a, I don't even know that I would say that there's a love story in it. There's a relationship in it. But I don't think this is, I don't know. Like, I guess you're answering this question already because you're saying that you didn't get that from it at all. But like, I just didn't see this as like a romance.
Well, like it's not about them falling in love.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about them becoming more in love or like reconnecting necessarily. Where is the romance? I have to say this to get it off my chest because I couldn't stop thinking it as I was reading. This feels like, and this is probably just because like I've trained myself to read things this way, it feels like a thinly veiled disability narrative in some ways, because Miri is remembering how Leah was before and thinking about how good things were. Leah has undergone, like, lived through a traumatic event that has left her unable to do things she used to be able to do. Mm. And she has to learn how to adapt to how she is now. And Miri can't handle it.
Yeah, I think like the one element that makes it a little more than disability, more like maybe depression, I don't like the fact that she is just fully not the same person she was before, like personality wise sure. like emotionally not the same person.
I would maybe wrap depression in with like mental disability, like it's in right. the family
right
of things, and people argue about that, but it's
yeah
it's related. I don't know, it just
yeah.
I kept thinking about it the whole time I was reading, and like knowing that's probably not what this book is getting at all.
I mean, it's okay yeah. for you to read that into it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so. I think I was thinking a lot about reading it, this as, like, a story, like, a kind of, like, dementia narrative, yeah. perhaps. And maybe that's just because, like, that's something that I've been thinking about a lot lately because of personal stuff. But it feels like I recently listened to this, like, audio narrative about this woman whose husband was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and it was kind of just about, like, the last, like, 5 years or so of, like, their life together and how he did just become a completely different person before he even, like, lost his memory, you know? It just, like, changed his entire, you know, way of being with her and with the world. And also not just the fact that like this is a disability, but it's also like a terminal disability right. or like something that is leading, it's getting worse and it's degenerative. It's leading to an end, you know? And I think that was because like when, if you think about it from a perspective of like, oh, this person is like different now and they're like learning to live with it. But it's like for her, then it becomes like a very problematic thing if you think about it in terms of that, because it's like, I guess the best thing to do is just die, like, yeah. which is obviously not how we want to think about stories like that. Well, so I think it. Go ahead.
I mean, okay. Maybe this is getting into the ending, which we're going to talk about later. So, no, we can wait.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. It's fine.
It's okay. I'll wait.
It is a lot. Like, Miri is mourning Leah before the end of the book.
Yes.
And I don't know. I didn't think about... I mean, I guess I did think about it a little bit because of Miri's mom.
I think that to me was... And maybe this is because this is, like, what's personal to me. But I mean, like, I think to me, like, a lot of this book is, like, about mourning and, like, when do you start mourning someone?
Yes.
Like... There's this weird thing where, you know, like, there's a lot of, like, mourning people before they're, like, fully gone happening here. And they talk about that a lot, like, especially, like, when, you know, like, these people go missing. There's, right. like,
yeah.
like, at what point do we mourn them and how long are we supposed to just, like, hold on to any hope that they're going to come back? So, like, that to me, I mean, like, that seems super obvious, but that to me seems like a big part of... This book is about, like, mourning and sort of, like, the guilt that comes with, like, mourning someone before they're, like, fully gone.
Yeah.
And, like, anticipatory grief. Like, knowing you're gonna have to feel this, so you might as well start feeling it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just got excited
about sad
shit.
I don't have any personal experience with, like, having someone close to me have dementia, but I've heard Todd talk about it a lot. Because, like, both his grandfather and his grandmother on different sides had Alzheimer's, and it was, like, very bad for their whole family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And... Like, he has talked about, and I've heard his grandma talk about, like, oh, you know, the grandma who did not have Alzheimer's.
Right.
she talked about her husband, and she was like, you know, we didn't know that anything was wrong because he was so quiet anyway. And then he started acting differently. And I don't know. Like, it's just scary. It's scary and... I think it does raise a question of, like, when is someone not themselves anymore? Like, at what point?
And, like, you get these little glimmers of, like, hope or her seeing. Like, there's that moment when, like, Leah and Miri are, like, sitting on the bed and Leah, like, kind of, like, leans into her and kind of touches her for the first time since she's come back in, like, a real way. Talks to her, yeah, and she feels like that's, like, my Leah, like, I'm seeing her, and she's there, but, like, then she's gone again, yeah. And that kind of, like, the, like, flickering out of someone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I think this book does succeed in that way, in, like, the central metaphor that it's aiming for. I think it's successful. It's just the parts, the separate parts are not working together as well as I want them to.
Mm-hmm. What is that? Sorry.
Sure. So I guess, like, we can go into the next question, which I don't know, kind of not a question, but I'm seeing, like, some reviews on Goodreads that are calling this horror, which I think is interesting.
Yeah.
Because there are horror elements here, but I don't really think I would call this horror. But that said, let's talk a little bit about the horror.
I feel like Murray has a lot to say about this.
Murray is really chomping at the bit.
So
to get his opinions known.
I can see why some people would consider it horror, and I would argue that the Leah sections are horror.
Yeah.
Like, full stop.
It's got a very, like, alien...
Yeah, like, if you just...
Slash the thing slash vibe.
That, that Kristen Stewart movie where she's in the Meg.
That no one no, other than Meg. What's it? Oh, it's Emily not saw. Meg.
Hold on. Kristen...
It's called, like, Underwater.
Yeah,
it's
But that one was... I mean, yeah, it's called Underwater. Not to give it away, but, like... I mean, there was some, like... Cthulhu type shit happening in that movie. Yeah. Like, it got pretty wild, I'm just saying. But I mean, like, it was kind of like that movie, like, for real, as someone who saw it.
Now I'm like, do I need to watch this?
As the movie's sole fan.
But yeah, I would say, like, if you just, okay, hear me out. You know those parts that we don't like of Miri's sections? Mm-hmm. Take out all of that. Just have the parts where she's, like, trying to figure out what happened and trying to figure out what's going on with this weird-ass company that maybe doesn't exist. And Leah's section, I would argue that's a horror novel.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Yeah.
And I was in.
Okay.
I was into that part.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, the only thing that makes this not a horror novel are the parts that we didn't like. Anyway.
Which is, like, 50% of the book. So
I mean, you're right that all of Leah's sections and the circumstances around her sections, definitely horror.
Yeah. Well, and then it's interesting to think about, like, what this book, like, what kind of, like, allegory, or not even allegory, but metaphor or whatever, like, how would the way that this book, feels like a real, like, mourning and grief story change if we did take out all of those.
I don't think it would change, honestly, because, like, all of that stuff, like, you still have the main story of, like, something being really wrong with her and her not being able to figure it out and, like, realizing that, like, this person that she cared about is gone and, like, mourning the loss of her while she was... You still have all of that. The only thing you don't have is, like, details about their relationship that, like, didn't actually tell us anything about their relationship.
Right.
So, I fully believe that this is the same story, but better without all that stuff.
It would be different, yeah, I think, but it could still do a lot of the same stuff.
Yeah. And I think...
Yeah, I think...
space to, like, get more of the stuff that we were interested in knowing more about, which I know isn't, like, the point of the story, but I just wanted it to be that story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right, or, like, a more successful, because, like, I do like the idea, again, like, I love romance, and I love reading about love stories, so I'm not complaining about there being romantic storyline at the center of this, but I wanted that part to be better.
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't want it to not exist. I wanted it to be good, you know? Mm-hmm. And, like, I think, so that's where I struggle when I'm like, if we took all of that stuff out, it would, yes, still be the same book and it would be better because it would be missing the stuff that we didn't care about, but it also wouldn't be what I wanted still.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Like, I think I wanted, like, if you take that out, you have to put something else in its place.
Yeah.
But, like, I think it just needs to be different. Like, we really just need to workshop this book. Because, like, it's
not
frustrating.
Ready.
It's frustrating because, like, the whole time I was reading this, I was like, this is a, like, there's a good book in here somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that's what's really frustrating because I'm like, I just feel like there's a good book in here somewhere, but there's a lot that needs to be.
I can't imagine being an editor and being like, yeah, no notes. This is good. Let's
I mean,
go.
I'm sure.
Some people love
I'm
this
I'm sure
book,
they
so
change stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I have no idea where this was when it started. But I do really, I get the sense reading it that it does feel, and we talked about this a little bit when we talked about School for Good Mothers, but it does feel like something that could have been a short story that really got stretched out in the wrong ways, you know?
Yeah.
And it's short, but
it didn't feel
it could have
short.
Been shorter. You know?
It did not feel short at all.
I don't know. Like, to me, it was fast read, but I...
Parts that I didn't care about were, like, easy for me to process quickly, you know? So I was, like, reading it fast. How hard is it to process the sentence, like, she laughed against my throat or whatever. Like,
It took me longer to process it because I was sort of eye-rolling internally, just being like, ugh.
Yeah.
I don't care that she laughed at your throat again.
Right. And, like, that stuff at the beginning, I was like, oh, like, sweet. And then the more of it there was and the more it was, like, not any different or any deeper than it had been the whole time, I was just like, okay, like, I can get on board with, like, a couple of little asides that are sweet. Like, I think about, and, like, when Mary first started reading this, she texted me, like, this is like Annihilation, which it is in a lot of ways, yeah. Very similar story. But I think about Annihilation and I think about how that was like a perfect, for me, like, balance of that relationship and what ends up happening. And there are just a few little, like, key moments about their relationship and what it was like before. Like how he called her, like, little bird or ghost whatever bird. Like I don't ghost bird okay but there were like little moments like that were like it what this was aiming for, but they were, I think, more powerful in that there were less of them and they were more like relevant to the story.
I thought about Annihilation a lot while I was reading this book, and I just kept wishing this was Annihilation, which it's not doing the same thing at all that yeah. Annihilation is doing, but it, like, I wanted something different, because I feel like Annihilation, similarly, is not showing its hand. Right? Like, it's not just saying, like, oh, yeah, here's what's happening, point blank, right? Like, it's kind of coy with what's happening. It doesn't give you too much at one time. There's no big grand reveal where everything's explained. There's not even a big grand reveal at the end of that trilogy. But, like, here, it felt like there was no grand reveal, and there were just a lot of pieces that didn't completely fit together in a coherent way for me, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't, and it's feel also like it was leading driving towards something.
Or it did, but the thing it was driving towards, I think, like, was pretty easy to guess.
Yeah.
Like, I think we all kind of knew, and we can, like, get into the ending, but I think, I mean, she's clearly, like, more comfortable in the water. Mm-hmm. She's kind of starting to, you know, it's like she's gonna just, like, dissolve into the ocean.
Yeah.
Like, and then what, there's, like, a line when she, after she takes her to her mom's house, and she's like, I didn't plan on taking her into the ocean. I'm like, you didn't? Then, like, why did you bring her here?
Yeah, why'd you go to your, like, mom's house?
Like, what do you mean you didn't plan on taking her to the ocean?
Okay, so if we're gonna talk about the end, I do want to talk about how this reminds me yeah. of, this ending reminds me of an Amy Bender story. Mary, do you know, you're not,
I know who Amy Bender is, hold but on, I have not read any Amy Bender.
Hold on. Let me look up the name of the story, because it's otherwise why I talk about it, right?
I mean, that tracks, though, because she does a lot of, like, magical realism, right?
Yeah, I'm just trying to make sure this is the right story.
I mean, really, what is magical?
Yeah, okay. So, the name of the short story, it's, I love this short story, but it was a short story, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, you get what I'm saying. In the short story, it's about this woman and her lover, and he is starting to de-evolve. Because he, like, starts as an ape and then he turns into, like, a turtle. So, like, let's yeah. not think about that too hard. But, like, he's mm-hmm. de-evolving. And so, like, basically by the end of the story, she has to take him to the water because he is, like, a whatever the yeah, tiny little ocean things we all started as. To me, that was, like, a very similar story because it's about this relationship and, like, he's, like, slowly disappearing and then at the end she takes him to the ocean. And I was like, wow, it's, like, the yeah. same thing except lesbian.
Or it's, you know, like that Harry Styles music video.
Yeah. The Amy Bender story was first.
The fish into the ocean.
This came out in 98.
Okay.
It's called The Rememberer. Did I say that?
The Rememberer.
Yep.
We will link to it.
Sure, if I can find it.
Yes. Yeah. We'll link to.
I bet I can find it.
I'm sure it's online somewhere.
Sure. Yeah, you know how short stories are. Anyway, yeah.
But yeah,
that just reminded me of that.
I feel like this could have and probably started as could have been and probably started as a short story.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And I mean, to be fair, you know, like Amy Bender is better at short stories as well. I think sometimes these high concept things just kind of work better as short stories.
Yeah. But everybody wants a novel.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's tough out there for short story writers because short story collections do not sell the way novels sell.
Yeah, so, exactly.
We talked a little bit. I mean, we talked a lot about grief, but we talked a little bit about Mary's mom and that storyline. I thought it was interesting that, like, the book was kind of dealing with two different types of grief at the same time, which is, like, the kind of, like, aftermath of a death and also that, like, anticipatory grief or the, like, someone's not quite gone yet grief. So, like, did we feel – like, how did you feel about the balance of those two things? And, like, did you – I don't know. Did you think that they worked together or was it, like, distracting that it was two different griefs, if that makes sense?
It wasn't distracting, and I think that they inform each other. But it felt unusually heavy-handed for a book that gave me nothing anywhere else.
Yeah. What Mary said, I agree.
Okay, like, this book wasn't interested in explaining anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it felt weird to be like, look at these parallel griefs.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know.
I see that.
I thought that the narrative about Mary's mom was interesting and, like, definitely, you know, moving. I felt something.
Yeah.
That sounds
I felt bad. More
like I
about that relationship. No, I understand what you mean. And I think I felt more about that relationship than I did about. And I also kind of, I mean, there's this other, like, underlying thing going on where Mary's or Miri's mom dies of, is it Parkinson's that she has? Or is it MS? She has some kind of, like, degenerative,
I think,
like,
it was,
muscle condition.
I think it was MS.
Okay. But Mary kind of, like, reflects on this multiple times, like, this is a genetic disorder, mm-hmm. and it could happen to me, and do I get tested for it or not? And it's kind of, like, interesting to throw that in there, I feel like it didn't really explore it very much beyond the very basic fact of it existing. Mm-hmm. I felt like that was something that could have been more tapped into,
like, many
that was kind of... Yeah, just kind of left hanging. But I guess we can start to wrap up because this book is not that long and not that complicated.
I have a question.
Yeah. Yes.
What was... Okay, this is like Mary's plot corner. Maybe I didn't understand it. Maybe it was a Bourne situation. Maybe.
I think it was kind of a Bourne situation, but ask your question.
What was the eye?
That was a giant sea creature, right?
Yeah, but, like, what was it?
Well, you just never know. You just never know.
You just
I know. Think I mean, think I assume it was that, like I think if you see the movie Underwater starring Kristen Stewart, it will all make sense.
I really understand.
Like, for real though. Like, I don't know, it was a fun movie.
My interpretation of this is that this creature exists down there that is, like, gigantic, and somehow this center, quote-unquote, has, like, found out about it, but they know that, like, you have to be down there for a long time before you'll see it or something. I don't know. But they send down this crew intentionally, like, knowing that they're going to be trapping them down there and hoping that they will eventually come into contact with this creature. And that was kind of, like, my interpretation of it.
But here's my thing. What happened to this company? Where did they go?
I don't know.
I guess they got scared of being sued or
something. I want more of this in the story. If we're going to make it a story, let's do it. If it's going to be a short story, you can leave this stuff vague. If it's a novel, like, I don't need some more.
It doesn't necessarily matter to me what the creature is. Like, I don't think it's important to the story. But there's, like, some suggestion that whatever happens down there. Like, why is Leah turning into a jelly?
I don't know if it's because she was down there for too long and it was too deep or what. If that's like it just because no one else has been quite that deep or down. And it's like the ocean is mysterious and shit can happen. I was kind of feeling like the creature was some kind of octopus like thing because of the octopus that she talked about before. So that's kind of what I was imagining was like a very gigantic octopus.
Me too. I guess there were just, like, gaps. So, like, on one hand, it's like, if we're going totally, like, metaphor, magical realism, it's not really magical realism, and I dare not even bring up that.
I feel like it's more in our soft sci-fi category that we were talking about before.
If we're doing that sort of stuff, don't let me see the eye. Don't throw in like a creepy organization, like leave that stuff even vaguer. But if you're gonna let me see an eye and you're gonna suggest that there's some connection between whatever that thing is and what's happening to Leah, I need just like a little bit more.
And like if Mary is gonna investigate it, because like there's an investigation happening, so like I expect
right, like, and like, she like gets in touch with
Mary,
Jelka's sister.
So like that to me, like you put that thread in there, and so I want it to go somewhere, you know?
Yeah,
right. And then she's gonna meet up with Jelka's sister, and she's like, I have information. And then they meet up and she's like, my sister died. And that's like all the information she has.
And like, I was thinking not, like, oh yeah, she died in the same way. And like, no, she died on the submarine.
Yeah. She died, I guess, directly outside of the submarine.
I mean, I guess we could say this is kind of like
directly outside.
Like, Leah does the slow fade. Turn into a jelly, return to the sea. She's not the same person she was. And I guess Jelka saw she was slipping and was like, time to go.
Well, and they were hearing voices down there.
Jelka was hearing the voices first.
Yes.
Yeah, and then once she died, Leah started hearing voices.
Which probably was connected to the eye. Which is
and
why
then
this
Mateo,
is a horror
the
novel,
other guy,
I think,
was like getting angry. He was having like outbursts.
He wasn't okay
like that.
Either.
Typical man.
Yeah.
Responding. Right.
Well, it was just like it was affecting them all in different ways. And part of it was like, is it just like the isolation or is it something else too? Like, so that all that stuff was all very interesting. And it was very much like it was similar to The Thing, which I like watched for the first time recently.
I still
and
have not
had,
seen
like,
it.
Oh, Mary, I think you'll really
you
like
watch it.
It's on my
really
list
like it.
Of I kind of
wait.
Got on
wait
a
till it's wintry at this point. You know, like wait until November.
But if
December.
You want this without the romance, that's The Thing. If you want this with just Leah's storyline, that's The Thing.
Or underwater. Hear me out. I'm just saying.
Mary is the underwater. Emily's the underwater evangelist.
Well,
I'm just
the title
the show.
Of the episode. Go watch Underwater.
That is just Mary's section. Like it is people stuck underwater, and there's a weird creature down there. Like what?
Leah's section.
Yeah. What more do you want? That's what you want, right? Kristen Stewart.
Isn't that what you want?
We should have just watched that movie and talked about it instead of reading this book, is what I'm trying to say.
Zay, this isn't based on a book, but it is similar to a book.
But just look, I'm talking about this movie so much, you would think it's my favorite water movie, ocean movie. But that just shows you how much I love Moana, because I love Moana more than underwater.
Yes.
That's
so speaking of underwater, my final question. What is it about the sea?
It's scary.
Yeah, I guess what makes it a fitting central image for a story about loss is my question.
I'm gonna have to ask Amy Bender that, because she did the same thing.
I mean, I will say, like you said, Kelly, it's like always there. You think about it across time. We as humans are never gonna be able to like outrun death, I guess. And the ocean is similarly constant. I mean, for me, the ocean is scary. And if you want to talk about something that's mysterious, I feel like Julia was just watching Discovery Channel one night and was like, ooh, weird things live at the bottom of the ocean.
Well, I mean, and if you want to think about life as being cyclical, we all started in the ocean. And so we're all returning to the ocean at the end of our lives. Makes sense.
Yeah. I think there's something about the way that, like, that the tide pulls stuff out and kind of, I don't know, like, that's, it's kind of like the idea of death, like, coming slowly for you, or of someone disappearing slowly, too, the way that Leah does. It's like the tide creeps, like, closer and closer into the shore. Yeah, maybe that. And also the, I don't know, there's like the cyclical nature of like the moon and the tides, and I don't know. I just think it's interesting. I don't really have an answer myself, but,
I
think it fits.
I have a quote I liked
that I could, yeah,
I could share. This is probably more about grief, but I just remembered I had highlighted this. This is when Juna, Jelka's sister, is talking to Miri. She says, I think the thing about losing someone isn't about the loss, but the absence afterwards. Do you know what I mean? The endlessness of that. She looks sideways at me and sniffs. My friends were sad. People who knew my sister were sad. But everyone moves on after a month. It's all they can manage. It doesn't mean they weren't sad, just that things keep going or something. I don't know. She rolls her shoulder, shakes her head. It's hard when you look up and realize that everyone's moved off and left you in that place by yourself. Like, they've all gone on, and you're there still, holding on to this person you're supposed to let go of.
Yeah.
Then she says, let go of them in the water. Which?
What?
Wink.
But, yeah. I highlighted or marked quite a few pages, actually, because there were some, like, really nice, like, one line or two line, like, observations that sort of, like, hit you in the way that a lot of it wants to. Mm-hmm. I think it reaches for it a lot, and it only gets there sometimes. But there are those times when it does say something and you're like, oh, my heart.
There are some really beautiful, like, reflections on loss and grief. But I just don't know that those nice reflections are, like, working together in a cohesive narrative to, like.
Yeah. Now I'm curious. Hold on. Let me just grab mine and see if there's anything that I should. Oh, this part I sent to you guys because I just thought it was, like, very, it felt very true, which is, the problem with relationships between women is that neither one of you is the automatically wronged party, which frankly takes a lot of the fun out of an argument. Like, it's such a, like, strange experience being in relationships with women, because for the first time in my life, I'm like, I might be wrong in this situation.
Maybe it's just me, but I frequently think I'm wrong. Not wrong, but I frequently think, am I being mean?
Yeah.
Am I being too quick to be judgy?
I mean, to be fair, you're in a relationship with, like, a man who is, like, good.
A sensitive
so,
man. Yeah. Ben is very good.
I've been in lots of relationships.
Apologizing for shit, so.
Yeah.
I don't have to.
I've been in relationships with, like, dudes who every argument we had was, like, very much not my fault in a very objective way. So, anyway, what did we rate it, everyone?
I gave it a 2.
Ooh, low.
Fair.
I gave it 3.
Yeah,
low, but fair.
It didn't come together for me.
I can't say I'm surprised by that rating. Yeah. I gave it a 3.
Yeah, if somebody was like, I love this, it's great, I wouldn't be like, how dare you like this piece of crap. It just, like, wasn't, it did not come together for me.
I gave it a 3 because there were parts of this book that I did really enjoy. And like I said earlier, like, at the end of the day, like, I was like, there is a good story in here. And I can understand why some people are really liking it. Mm-hmm. But I just, like, see the potential for this to be a different story than what it is, and it would be a better story.
Yeah.
And so that's really frustrating to me.
That makes me mad.
I agree.
Like, that's, I think that's why I gave it a 2, is because I see how it could be really good, and I'm mad.
Well, it's like the way you're harder on things that you have, like, high expectations for, mm-hmm. or that you feel could be. Because, like, what this book promised me, and what all of the like glowing reviews on the back cover promised me from, like, some authors that I really respect, or, you know, just, like, so many things that are like, this book is perfect, it's such a beautiful love story, like, blah, blah, like, all of this stuff. And I'm like, that's what I wanted. What I got is simply not that. Mm-hmm. So I am disappointed, because I had like high expectations. I mean, I picked it. This was the book that I picked. Of course, I, like, thought it was going to be good. So, you know, and not to say it's bad, but it's frustrating. So yeah, I gave it a 3, and I think I'm like, it's like a pretty solid 3 for me.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It's a solid 3 for me too. I appreciated that it was short.
We have, mm-hmm. yeah, that's always good, especially when something isn't
great
hitting.
Yeah.
So, anyway, we have no feedback.
No feedback.
Go read Annihilation. We have no feedback for our last book, which is The School for Good Mothers by Jessamyn Chan. So if you have read that, we would love it if you'd send us some feedback. We will still read it.
Yeah, you can still write in about any, like, anything that we've read. Yeah. You can write in.
You got some white teeth feedback?
Go for it.
Leave us a comment. Send us an email. That was our first book.
I will try my best to remember that book.
Yeah. That was a long time ago. What's on the blog?
Here I Am was our first episode, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry. White Teeth was what, our second episode?
All I remember about Here I Am is butt stuff.
I remember it was Here I Am because our first episode was Here We Are.
Yeah, true.
I'm sorry.
I remember the line about, like, he shoved a burrito in his face orifice.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Good times.
Memories.
Yeah. On the blog, we have 3 delights to show you. More than that.
3 delights.
But 3 new delights. But, you know, other things also that are older delights. That still
delight. There's a cornucopia of delight.
Maybe even an afternoon delight.
Yeah. Or a morning or night.
We have a discussion of My Best Friend's Exorcism. Kelly and I talked about it. Emily couldn't join us because she was in Hawaii.
Oh, shockingly was not there for that. But I did watch
it. It seems wrong.
It felt a little wrong. I had feelings and thoughts that I was just texting you guys as I was reading it.
Yeah.
Write in feedback.
Yeah. Okay. And then you can read your feedback to us live.
We talked about it, though. Emily should have been there, but scheduling conflicts did not.
I was in Hawaii. Did you guys know that I went to Hawaii?
I didn't feel that bad.
I think you have about one Hawaii thing left. You got, I think that's the fourth time. So we got to get five in.
Oh, shoot.
Be thinking
okay.
about.
Okay.
Yeah.
special guest, Kyle and I.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
Are going to write about Hellraiser. We were going to do it last week, fun. But Kyle needed a little more time because he was out of town. And it is percolating now. We're talking about the new 2022 adaptation of Hellraiser. But rest assured, Kyle is a Clive Barker historian. Mm. And I have seen several Hellraiser movies. And I just really love this franchise. So we are excited to chat about that. And then at the end of the week, this week, which I guess it's already out by the time you're listening, but YA Book Club is here.
Mary and I are talking about one of our fave YA authors. We were just talking about this earlier today because I just don't, I feel like people are sleeping on this author, Lamar Giles. Very, very, I mean, why are people not reading Lamar Giles at the rate that they're reading, like, John Green, honestly?
I don't know.
He's a much better author.
I truly,
just saying.
So we read Lamar Giles' book, Not So Pure and Simple. Loved it.
Laughed out loud.
On a previous YA book club. Whole premise of it is, like, boy joins a true love waits group. Because he wants to sleep with a girl that's in the group. Hilarious. Great.
So good.
Ended up being like a Tinder examination of race and religion and
and toxic masculinity.
Penelope.
And rape culture.
Yeah. All of these
and
things.
Penelope culture.
And now I told Emily, like, literally I was reading this book and when I finished, I was like, he's done it again. He has done it
I'm
again.
I'm not done with it yet. I'll be done
it's
before
another
we write
banger.
The blog, but I'm enjoying
it's another
it.
Banger.
It's, you'll be done before you write the blog.
Yeah, I will.
I listen. The book is The Getaway.
Yeah, I was like, we should say what the book is called. It's The Getaway by Lamar Giles.
Yeah. On, I drove to Athens, Georgia, and like the whole way, I was just like, oh, what's going to happen next? Like, I was truly on the edge of my seat listening.
And
to this
speaking
book.
Of Disneyland, I feel like this book is very high key. About Disneyland.
It is just about Disney. It's about Disney World.
Yeah,
about Disney World.
Disney World. Yeah. I mean, it's not called Disney World, but I'm like, y'all are talking about Disney World though, right?
It's Disney World.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, obviously we're very excited. We want to talk about it right now, obviously, but I'm not done yet, so you gotta wait.
Up next.
Awesome. Up next, we have our next other sode will be on The Midnight Club, Mike Flanagan's new show on Netflix.
Flanagan joint from in the Flaniverse, as Netflix is trying to make it be.
Flanagan Cinematic Universe, the Flaniverse.
Truly, Netflix says, like, part of the Flaniverse.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I'm not mad. And at least it's not the Flanagan Cinematic Universe. That would be worse. But Justine is a big fan of his shows as well. And she has finished this already and keeps being like, did you watch it yet? Did you watch it yet?
Well, will she be joining us?
I could ask her if she wants to.
Yeah.
She might be a little shy. I'll ask her.
She may join on one condition.
Yes.
Fig and
Kittens.
Baby must also be there.
Fig and Baby have to be there. I'll ask her.
I have a crush on Baby.
Baby is truly a sweet gentleman and an angelic soul.
Three little legs.
And I love him.
Yeah.
His three legs. So cool. His sweet little face.
On our next book,
anyway, yeah, bow. I guess.
I'm going to fix this typo. There we go. Go ahead.
There you go.
What were you going to say?
Oh, it's you.
Oh, why? Well, that's you. I know. I was saying something, but it sounded like you were going to say something, and I didn't know if you were ready for me to talk.
Oh, no. I was just saying that I don't even remember. I don't know.
Okay. Well, on our next episode.
Go ahead. Book pisode for that one person who got mad when we were calling it that. Remember.
Pisode.
Shout out to our haters.
Yeah, shout out to our haters. We're going to keep calling it a book pisode because we fucking like it. And it's our podcast, so I'm wagging my finger around. You can't see.
Deal with it, bitch.
What was the concern that it sounded like piss?
Yeah.
But yeah, which is in the word episode anyway.
Also has the word piss in it, so maybe deal with your feelings around urine. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway. What was I going to say?
You're going to tell us what the next book episode
is. Oh, yeah. The next book episode is The Women Could Fly by Megan Giddings. So I read Megan Giddings' last book, which was Lakewood, which was like a really wild, like very difficult to categorize by genre, but maybe like sci-fi, like literary sci-fi thriller type thing. The Women Could Fly seems like it's going to be like a mix of horror and sci-fi and dystopia.
I'm in.
So I'm excited. That's all I really know about it. I try to only vaguely know what the plot is going in, but Carrie Hodge is going to be joining us for this episode. So we're very excited to have her on.
Yay!
Ed Weird be joining us?
Yeah, probably. We'll get pictures of Ed Weird.
Yay.
The cat.
If you have feedback about this episode or any other episode, you can email us at thesquad@booksquadgoals.com. Our website is booksquadgoals.com. That's where you can find our blog. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Book Squad Goals. I did just look at our Apple Podcast reviews, and no one has left a new review. So you know what's happening. I'm bringing the shaming back.
Oh, no.
How dare you on tonight, Halloween of all nights, not leave us a review when that is our favorite holiday as a podcast? I think we can agree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So before you get in your little costume to go do your little Halloween party or whatever it is that you're doing tonight, please pull out your phone.
I mean, people could also be listening to this on November 1st or 2nd or 3rd or whatever.
Okay, whatever day it is. All right. I don't care what day it is. It shouldn't matter. You should be able to do this on any day. Take out your phone. Go to Apple Podcasts, search Book Squad Goals, scroll down, click write a review, hit the 5-star button, and just write like, really great, love it, loves it, post. That's literally it. It's so easy. Like, come on. Please.
Or else.
That's it.
Or else.
That's everything.
Wow.
Or else.
Okay.
Well,
cool. Well, that's
go read an Alley.
That's my sign off.
Go read our blog.
Go watch Underwater.
Go watch Underwater.
Said no one ever.
I have said it. You haven't. You don't know.
All right.
If you like some stuff in this book, I'm like underwater. I'm just.